move to the second case today, In Re Conseco Incorporated.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Bill O'Connor. I represent Roland Dick as the trustee of the amended Hilbert Residence Trust and the Stephen and Tommy Sue Hilbert Trust. In this instance, we are appealing from an adverse ruling against us at the district court and also at the bankruptcy court level. During that time, a summary judgment was entered against my client, disallowing claims. My client was damaged in that it had a breach of contract action against Conseco for the breach of four split-dollar life insurance agreements. In December of 2001, Conseco ceased paying its portion of the premiums that it was required to pay pursuant to contract. My clients continued to pay their portion of the premiums up through and continuing into the bankruptcy, thus triggering Conseco's obligation to pay, which it did not and refused to pay. When Conseco filed for bankruptcy in December of 2002, it alleged that the split-dollar life insurance agreements had terminated. The split-dollar life insurance agreements contained a clause that stated that they would terminate upon the filing of a Conseco bankruptcy. However, under the bankruptcy code...
Did the life insurance policies continue in force until the application for bankruptcy?
The life insurance policies continued in force... continued up to the filing of the bankruptcy, however, not at their face value amounts, meaning under the terms of the split-dollar life insurance agreements, they were required to be kept up at certain face value amounts in order to save the value of those life insurance policies. They were converted to paid-up life insurance at much lower face values. However, the split-dollar life insurance agreements required that the policies be maintained at their face value levels. Did I answer your question, Ron? Conseco contended that the split-dollar life insurance agreements terminated because they contained a termination on bankruptcy clause. However, under the bankruptcy code, executory contracts, clauses that are contained in executory contracts that they terminate upon the filing of a bankruptcy are not valid. Therefore, the determination of whether the split-dollar life insurance agreements are executory or not is key to determining whether the trusts have a valid claim in the bankruptcy.
Well, how would the trust failure to pay premiums deprive Conseco of a benefit?
Under the split-dollar life insurance agreements, when Mr. Hilbert and his wife deceased, the payments that then flowed in would first be used to pay back Conseco its entire amount of the premiums that it had paid. By the very argument that it has made in this case, Conseco has conceded that there was not enough value in the life insurance policies at the time they filed bankruptcy to completely pay Conseco back. Therefore, Conseco receives not only a tax benefit from engaging in a split-dollar life insurance policy, but also engages the ability to have its money paid back. Plus, if we go back to the time at which the split-dollar life insurance agreements were executed, part of the purpose behind executing the split-dollar life insurance agreements was to avoid a stock sell-off upon the death of an executive, which would then could adversely affect the value of Conseco stock. That was not a purpose or objective of Conseco at the time of the bankruptcy. However, that does not change the material obligations of the parties under the contract. And I think this is important because both at the bankruptcy court and district court level, there is much discussion behind Conseco's purpose for entering into the contracts as opposed to what their contractual obligation was. Conseco's purpose for entering into the contracts does not turn on what their contractual obligation was. The contractual obligation for both parties is clearly stated that they shall pay the insurance premiums. Every party to this contract had the same mandatory obligation to pay. The fact that Conseco did not like the contract any further by the time it filed bankruptcy does not affect its mandatory contractual obligation to pay.
Well, before the bankruptcy was filed. Am I correct in thinking that if the trust failed to pay, the agreements would simply have terminated, and then Conseco wouldn't have been able to sue for breach of contract or compel the trust to pay the premium?
I believe that is correct, Your Honor.
So isn't that a problem for you?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Because, you know, what obligation, you know, what significant unperformed obligation would we have? You know, if that's true before the bankruptcy, then I think that creates a problem for you.
Let me address that point. It was later in my outline, but I'm happy to address it now. Under the Countryman test, which has been adopted in the Seventh Circuit, the determination is not whether you can sue somebody. The determination as to whether you have an obligation on both sides of the contract is, if you failed to perform your obligation, would it excuse the other side of performance? And that is exactly what has been written into these contracts. If the trust failed to pay its portion of the insurance premium, it excused Conseco from its obligation to pay the insurance premium. Simply because the parties bargained as to what their contractual remedies may or may not be does not mean that they did not have a contractual obligation to do so. Take, for example, the Indiana cases cited regarding the party's ability to negotiate their remedies. For instance, in Indiana, no damage for delay clauses in construction contracts are valid. The courts encourage the parties to try and contract what their exact remedies will be. The fact that one party could not sue the other is not a determination as to whether they had a mandatory contractual obligation. The test is...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
The test the test of whether a contract is executory or not is a question of federal law, not of state law.
And whether the Conseco would be deprived of a benefit. I mean, shouldn't we have to focus on that?
I think no, for two reasons. One, the test of whether a contract is executory is a question of federal law. The question of whether a contract has been a part of a material breach for other parts of my argument is a question of state law. And under the federal law question of executory contracts, both in the Seventh Circuit and Professor Countryman's definition, which had been adopted in the Seventh Circuit, the test is, if you fail to perform your obligation, would it excuse the other side of performance? Under both tests, however, the trust's obligation is material. Simply because the contracts terminate does not mean it is not a material obligation. The trusts lose the value of the insurance proceeds. They lose the value of all the money that they have paid towards the insurance proceeds. They lose many contractual benefits if they fail to perform. Conseco loses the value of the death benefit that would pay when Mr. Hilbert and his wife deceased. Thus, there are material obligations on both sides of this contract. There are also separate arguments to be made regarding if the court were to find that this is not an executory contract. In this instance, for instance, Conseco was in material breach of the contract prior to the bankruptcy, in that Conseco had failed to pay its portion of the insurance premium. They have stipulated and admitted to this fact. However, in order to succeed at their summary judgment, they argued that they could enforce an option in the contract to liquidate the value of the insurance policies. In turn, the trust argued, you cannot enforce a contract in which you are of material breach. And thus, even if the contracts are not executory, Conseco is not allowed to enforce its options under the contract. And thus, at the very worst, the trust should remain in ownership of these insurance policies. And Conseco should not be allowed to liquidate them because they have breached that contract. Also, in regards to the non-executory part of this argument, Conseco waived its right to attempt to enforce its option to liquidate the insurance policies. And by that I mean this. Pursuant to Conseco's version of events, in December of 2002, the split-dollar life insurance agreements terminated. Thus, pursuant to Conseco, and the trust did not agree with this, the trust then had 60 days in which to pay Conseco back premiums and take full ownership and wipe away Conseco's right to exercise its option. The trust did not do so. However, after the 60 days, then Conseco was vested with an option to try and liquidate the insurance policies to gain back its money. That would have occurred in February of 2003. The first notice of any kind from Conseco in regards to its option, which it believes vested in February of 2003, did not occur until September 8th of 2004. There is absolutely no explanation as to why they waited from February 2003 until September the 8th of 2004 to notify anyone that they had some future intent to exercise an option. In Indiana, which controls this particular contract, an option which has no stated time period for executing must be executed within a reasonable time. Thus, under the circumstances, the trust had 60 days, and then it was a question of fact as to how long Conseco had to execute its option. And thus, it could not be determined on summary judgment whether Conseco's intent to exercise the option nearly 2 years later was reasonable under the circumstances. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor. Mr. Elliott?
If it please the court, my name is Tim Elliott. I represent the debtor, Conseco, Inc., in this case. I think there are two issues that are raised here. The first is the question of whether the split dollar agreements were executory on December 17, 2002, when Conseco filed for bankruptcy. The second issue is, if you accept that those contracts were not executory, does that finding, coupled with the other undisputed facts presented to the bankruptcy court, justify the entry of summary judgment in Conseco's favor? We believe the district court and the bankruptcy courts both got this correct in finding that, number one, the contracts were not executory, and number two, the entry of summary judgment was appropriate. I want to address the first issue, which is the question of executoriness. And I think it's important to start with the Countryman test, because I think that the test that Mr. O'Connor just articulated is not the Countryman test. It's not the test that this circuit has used in the past, and it's not even the test that the trusts advocated to the bankruptcy court. In the Countryman test, the terms material breach appear in the text of the Countryman test. The test is a contract is executory if all the parties to the contract have obligations which, if left unperformed, would amount to a material breach excusing performance by the other parties. That term material breach is critical. So is the term obligation, because those terms suggest that in order to be executory, the unperformed obligations have to be mandatory and they have to be significant. Now, why is that important? Because as this court has noted in the Gouveia case and in the Streets and Beard case, virtually every contract is going to have unperformed obligations on both sides at any given point in time.
Well, so if Hilbert and the trust failed to make payments, that would excuse Conseco from performing. Why isn't that enough to make the agreements executory?
Well, if that were true, then any act that could terminate a contract would rise to the level of making the contract executory. In this case, it wasn't a breach. It didn't defeat the party's expectations. It was just an act of termination, which, as you questioned him earlier, Conseco would be overjoyed if the trust in Steve Hilbert failed to make a premium payment. It wouldn't defeat their expectation, and it wouldn't be a breach. It would just be an act of termination. And Conseco could walk away and, in fact, would receive reimbursement for its substantial premium payments, and its expectations would not be defeated.
Well, could Hilbert or the trust have done at any point during the life of the agreements, what could they have done that would have constituted a material breach?
I'd have to think about that, because with respect to Stephen Hilbert, his only real obligation under the contract was to make his premium payments. That was really his only obligation. The trusts, their only obligation was to make payments in the event that Steve Hilbert didn't, or to cooperate with Conseco. I don't think either of those would give rise to material breach. I suppose if I had time and more imagination, I could think of other things that they could do to frustrate the intent of the split dollar agreements. I suppose they could do things to interfere with the insurers, but I'm not aware of anything right now. This court in the past, in the Gouveia case and in Streets and Beard, has indicated that has construed 11 U.S.C. 365 to require a relatively narrow interpretation of the term executory contract, and the focus has been on holding that only contracts with significant obligations, the failure to perform which would amount to a material breach, and there are those words again, material breach, makes a contract executory. Now, in the bankruptcy court, the trusts acknowledge that requirement. And in fact, in their brief to the bankruptcy court, they told the bankruptcy court that the bankruptcy court could settle this issue by asking a single question. And that question was, and I quote, whether both parties could sue for material breach if the other ceased performing. That was the question that they said the bankruptcy court should ask itself in deciding this issue. We believe they were correct in the bankruptcy court in articulating the countryman test. They've changed their position on it now, and I think they've gone from being correct to being wrong in changing their position, because what they're trying to do now is water down the countryman test. It's contrary to the clear terms of the countryman test. It's contrary to this court's prior rulings, and it would expand the notion of executory contract, as I said earlier, to something where any event of termination would any unperformed possibility of creating this event of termination would make a contract executory. These contracts were not executory. Hilbert had no requirement to make any payments at all. It was certainly not a duty that he had. If anything, I would submit to the court that it was a condition precedent. He could make the payment. If he did, then Conseco would have to perform in return, or he could elect not to make the payment, in which case the contract would terminate and everybody would go their ways and Conseco's would not be deprived of the benefit of its bargain. I would refer the court to the Third Circuit's decision in the Columbia Gas case. In that decision, the Third Circuit articulated this difference between a condition precedent and a contractual duty, and in that case the Third Circuit held, and we believe correctly, that an unperformed condition precedent was insufficient to make a contract executory. Indiana law with respect to what constitutes a material breach is in accord with the Columbia Gas case. Under Indiana law, which follows the restatement, there are five factors to consider in determining whether a breach is material. And if you distill those factors down to a rule of decision, it amounts to a breach is material if it deprives the non-breaching party of the benefit of its bargain. And again, in this case, their failure to pay wouldn't deprive Conseco of anything. The second major issue in the case is, assuming that the contracts were not executory, and we think they're not, was Judge Doyle correct in entering summary judgment for Conseco? The trusts have raised three separate issues in arguing that it was improper for her to enter summary judgment. Take each of them in turn. The first issue raised by the trust, or the first argument raised by the trust, is that there were material disputed issues of fact that precluded the entry of summary judgment. It's interesting that in their brief before this court, they do not cite anywhere in the record the evidence that they believe establishes these material disputed issues of fact. They can't do that. In the bankruptcy court proceedings, the parties filed Rule 7056 statements of undisputed facts. Conseco filed those statements. In response, the trusts either admitted all of the facts that Conseco had cited, on which its motion is based, or failed to respond, which has the effect of an admission. Nowhere in the record is there any evidence that the trust disputed any of the facts on which Conseco's motion for summary judgment is based. They did take issue with the wording of a couple of them, but those were certainly not the material facts on which the case was based. Mr. O'Connor will be back up here in rebuttal, and I hope that you will ask him to point where in the record they took issue with Conseco's facts. He can't do it. In addition, I will note that in their brief, many of the facts that the alleged disputed issues of fact that the trusts have raised are actually issues of law. For example, the trusts argue that whether or not the contracts were executory presents a disputed issue of fact. In fact, that is an issue of law which the court was entitled to resolve on the undisputed factual record before it. The second argument that the trust raised is that Conseco somehow waived its right to exercise its option under the early termination provisions of the agreement. That argument is wrong for three reasons. Number one, Indiana law on waiver is very strict. And under Indiana law, which governs here, a waiver has to be voluntary and intentional. There is nothing in the record that would even remotely suggest that Conseco voluntarily or intentionally waived any of its rights under the split dollar agreements. Number two, the trusts are not really being very candid acknowledging their role in preventing Conseco from exercising those rights. From February 2003 through the present, the trust and Conseco have been involved in litigation on this issue, and the trust have strenuously denied that Conseco even has those rights. And so it's a little bit disingenuous of them to come up here and argue that we should have exercised those rights earlier, when in fact they have now been in three courts seeking to prevent us from exercising those rights. Third issue with that is in arguing that Conseco has a time limit in which it can exercise its rights under the early termination provisions, the trusts are really trying to change the deal that was made in the split dollar agreements. Under the split dollar agreements, the early termination provisions were written to put a time limit on the trust's option. There's no time limit for Conseco. And the way that the early termination provisions are structured is the trusts, upon an early termination, have the ability to buy out Conseco. They can reimburse Conseco for its premium payments, and they have 60 days to do that. If the trusts don't do that, then the ball is in Conseco's court. And Conseco has two different ways in which it can exercise its rights in order to get reimbursement for its premium payments.
What was the percentage of premiums that the individuals were making?
I don't know the exact numbers. It's in the record somewhere, but I think it's fair to say that Conseco's total premium payments were in the millions of dollars, and the trusts were in the tens of thousands of dollars. It was a fairly, fairly significant difference. And which is why Conseco had such a strong interest in securing reimbursements for its payments. Now, there are three different ways under the agreement that it could secure reimbursement for its premium payments. They had their choice. They wanted to do it to buy Conseco out. They could do that. But once they failed to do that, then, as I said, the ball is in our court, and we could figure out which one we want to do. They're trying to change that deal right now. They're trying to impose a time limit on Conseco that's not in the agreement. And they're also trying to argue that if Conseco somehow doesn't exercise its right in what they believe to be a timely fashion, that Conseco's collateral assignment is somehow released and Conseco has lost any right to reimbursement. That's just not the deal that the parties struck. The final argument that the trusts have raised is that Conseco is somehow attempting to enforce a contract that it materially breached. And that's simply not the case. We are, and have been throughout these actions, the defendant. They have brought the suits. They have brought the claims. We're the defendant. And there's a big difference between a plaintiff trying to enforce a contract and a defendant defending against a breach of contract action by pointing out that the remedies sought by the plaintiff are not allowed under the contract. That's what we're doing here. All we are doing is simply saying your reading of the contract is incorrect, the remedies you are trying to seek are incorrect, and you haven't proven any damages under the contract. In addition, on this point again, in arguing somehow that Conseco should be barred from enforcing the early termination provisions or from exercising its rights under the early termination provisions, the trusts are really again trying to rewrite the deal. It was always the deal from the beginning that Conseco was going to get back its premium payments. Conseco, under the collateral assignment and under the terms of the split dollar agreements, has an absolute right to seek reimbursement for those payments and to secure reimbursement for those payments. And if you look at the terms of the split dollar agreement, it's written so that under any set of circumstances, the first money paid out by the insurance companies comes to Conseco. Under every provision, whether it's the death benefit being paid, whether it's early termination, the first money comes to Conseco. What they're really trying to do is say that they have a breach of contract action and that their damages remedy is essentially to attach a security interest on the funds being paid out so that the first funds being paid out don't go to Conseco, but they go to the trust. That's just not the deal, and there's nothing at the law to suggest that remedy is available to them. Unless the court has any other questions, I believe I'm done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. To address a few points briefly, Conseco again states that they would have been overjoyed by the time the bankruptcy was filed to no longer be burdened with these contracts. And once again, this is confusing two different issues. When Conseco entered into the contracts, it did wish to have the benefits of the contract. It was its expectation at that time. We cannot mix Conseco's ability to assume or reject the contract with whether the contract had a material obligation. If Conseco did not like the executory contract at the time it filed bankruptcy, under Section 365 of the Code, it has the ability to reject that contract. If we are going to engage the test that all the contracts that the debtor doesn't like are not executory contracts, then there is simply no reason for 365A to exist, which gives them the ability to reject the contracts that they do not like. Under the material breach argument, they are attempting to enforce the contract, but they're simply doing it in a way so that after this action is over, they can then file an action to have the insurance policies liquidated to secure the cash value. They have not yet done that, and to do so, they absolutely would have to take an action to enforce the contract. They used that ability at the bankruptcy and district court level to state that we would have no damages because someday in the future they would enforce the contract. Both the bankruptcy court and the district court accepted this argument. And then dismissed my argument that they are enforcing the terms of the contract by saying, well, they haven't filed an action yet, therefore they're not enforcing the contract. But as soon as this case is over, one way or the other, they will then go out and file an action to attempt to have the insurance policies liquidated. At that time, they will necessarily be attempting to enforce the contract, a contract that they are in material breach of, before any bankruptcy was filed. They are not allowed to do so. They have lost that right. Under the waiver argument, we are not attempting to change the terms of the contract in any way. It is black-letter Indiana law that an undated option must be exercised within a reasonable time. That is written into every option that does not have a date. The trust's option had a 60-day time period, and we recognize that. Conseco's option was undated. Pursuant to Indiana law, which controls, their option must be exercised within a reasonable amount of time. And what is or is not a reasonable amount of time is an issue of fact. Regarding the issue of fact, Conseco's statement that I say that there are material disputed issues between us is inaccurate. I believe there are material issues of fact that can only be determined by a fact finder and not at the summary judgment level. We both agree to those facts. The facts are this. The facts are that under Conseco's version of events, they were vested with an option in February of 2003 and gave no notice of it in any way until September the 8th of 2004. And it is inaccurate to state that we were fighting over their ability to exercise that option from February of 2003 until September of 2004. There was no mention of it in any way in the litigation. The first time it came up was when, out of the blue, a letter is sent in September of 2004 indicating that they may exercise their option in the future. There was no dispute about it up to that time. They were merely silent. Under Indiana law, that is an issue of fact that cannot be resolved on summary judgment. We cited to the case on this point. We cited to cases and treatises regarding collection of cases from other jurisdictions. There's simply no question that that is an issue of fact that cannot be determined at the summary judgment level. In this situation, these contracts are executory contracts. The fact is whether the terminate or somebody could sue for breach simply has no impact on whether it was an obligation that was mandatory. The contracts are all perfectly clear that the obligation to pay the premium on behalf of the employees is a shall. It was mandatory. It had to be done. And if they didn't do it, they lost the value of what they paid, they lost the death benefit, they lost everything that they had put into those contracts, and they lost, excuse me, my time has expired.
You can finish.
And they lost the time that they had put into these contracts. Conseco had the expectation that it wanted to realize when it entered into the contracts. The fact that it later changed its mind does not mean that it did not have a mandatory contractual obligation. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor. Mr. Elliott, the case will be taken under advisement.